Welcome back to another episode of Flashbacks Presents Cobra Kai. We've had a bit of a break, not out of any intention. We just had other recordings where there was actual effort involved, so we posted those first. So today we're starting Season 3, Episode 1, and from here on out we're going to break down and discuss and go way off the rails.
I can definitely break down. I am breaking down currently.
Yeah. We just finished crying together.
Yeah. Right. Parenthood is hard, and that's what is covered in Season 3 of Cobra Kai.
Yeah. Literally, the first episode, Diggs jumps right into the difficulties of parenthood. But this episode, you know, starts off, so Season 2 ended with the, you know, cliffhanger. They got great cliffhangers. Miguel was kicked off of a balcony at the school in the karate riot, as it's referred to through this episode, which is the best.
I love that term. I want to get in a karate riot, actually.
I hope someday, but I don't want to be on the bad side of a karate riot.
Is there a good side of the karate riot?
I don't know, maybe.
If you're not the one getting kicked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Karate riot means something else between me and my wife than it does in the show.
That's what you tell the kids when they walk in. It's just a karate riot. Don't worry about it. Boy, I've really got the voice of God going on tonight, don't I? Like, it's two octaves deeper than it usually is.
Yeah, it's all the crying.
It really drops my voice. A lot of people,
really,
it goes up, but for me, it drops down to a manly tone.
Loosened up, yeah. So, in this episode, Miguel is in a coma in the hospital with a potential paralyzing spinal fracture. And we have the kids dealing with the aftermath of the karate riot. You have the parents. You have the senseis. Johnny Lawrence is drinking his woes away at Applebee's because that's his jam. But he's not paying the tab because they keep giving him Coors Light.
And he ordered a banquet, damn it.
He ordered a banquet. Light beers for pussies. He let them know that.
That's right. That's why I only drink rum. Because I'm a karate pirate.
And then Daniel-san and his wife, Amanda, they're going to the school because the school board and everybody else has lost it over the karate riot and how teachers can react to violence in the school. And actually, I thought this part was really... We'll get into this. I thought that was a real nice critique on how things kind of are in the system.
Yeah.
And Daniel's daughter, Sam, is struggling when she does get to go back to school. You know, we say karate riot. We're making jokes. It's very intense, and I think it's really interesting. She's got, you know, basically a PTSD going on where she keeps flashing back to – to be fair – somebody attacked her with, like, mini Wolverine claws.
But I want to point out, like, she's got three cool scratch scars across her arm. Miguel is in the damn hospital with a broken back. But she walks in and she's like, oh, and people are like, how's the arm? It was like, it's a cool scar and a sweet story to tell your kids when they don't want to behave. Like, Mommy, how'd you get those scars? Well, you used to have an older brother. And that's how you get kids to take a bath. But she's, oh, my arm. And I get it. It was scary. But it wasn't like getting kicked off a balcony.
That's true. Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of focus on her compared to everybody at the riot amongst the other kids at school.
Yeah.
And part of that is it actually all that about her, or is it something she's perceiving? Is it her perception of how they feel about her?
I think it's the LaRusso the LaRusso ego coming through for her. I think that's what it boils down. Because, I mean, as we know, Johnny was the hero of the original Karate Kid movie.
Illegal kick, man.
Illegal kick. I do love that Johnny's beard is the worst beard I've ever seen. It really, like when we were watching with the youngest kid, and we just binged it all in one night, and he's 14, and he just looks up, and he's like, "That is a sad beard on a very sad man." And I was like, "Well, yes, son, it is."
And the listeners can't tell. You got two beardsmen here talking beards. We got some mighty beards.
Yeah, we do. We do. We look like we should be on the front of a longboat yelling at people on oars.
Yeah, and make sure you tune into our other front row show, White Guys with Beards. Real. Basically every show.
Welcome to White Guys with Beards, complaining about movies.
That's it. Yeah. To be fair, that fair hair, you don't get too many blonde guys with big bushy blonde beards.
No. The only time you see a bushy blonde beard is if it's, you know, behind the wheel of a windowless panel van. You kids like ice cream and kittens? Oh, just keep letting him drive.
I don't know. He looks legit.
He said he'd give me the coronavirus vaccine.
It's a bottle of Corona and an injection he has to give you in the shoulder.
You got yours in the shoulder? Oh, man. I do love, though, that he was so drunk that Johnny punches the window out of the dudes that were giving him a hard time. And he yanks the one dude out, but he's too... you were like, oh, he's going to be badass. And then they just whip the living piss out of him.
And that whole scene's great because he gets into it with them because they're at a bar and they turn it from the news to a baseball game and he's pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, come on. You're at a bar. Nobody wants the news on. The other thing that's really great is the one guy, the driver that's in there, is like a big, tough, kind of scary-looking Mexican dude, you know, and it's literally played to play on your, you know, your preconceived notions. And what's he say? Let's call the cops. They beat him up, and he said, we're going to call the cops. And I thought that was really great to, like, it puts you as a viewer on the spot. Like, oh, I thought these dudes are going to be like, you know, but they were kind of dicks, but that's it. You know, they're just like dudes. And I thought that was a really clever way to play on your preconceived notion on how things.
They defend themselves against him. He tries to throw a drunken punch, doesn't land. They knock him down. And then, yeah, they're like, let's call the cops. And then the cops are like, oh, this asshole again.
Oh, the Applebee's guy.
This guy's been kicked out of every O'Charlie's in the valley.
Oh, but those rolls are so good.
Who doesn't love an O'Charlie's?
So, anyways, Johnny ends up in jail. He gets out. It's it's Sam struggling with school. And then we have, God, I hate the character so much. I always forget his name. What's Johnny's son's name?
Robbie.
Robbie, God, I hate him.
That's
so
okay.
Much.
I had to look it up, too.
I just hate him. But he's on the lam.
He looks like Jonathan Taylor Thomas got somebody threw water on him, and then he popped off of him and got fed after midnight. That's what he looks like.
He's the gremlin version of JTT.
Exactly.
Oh, I wonder what the JTT fan club has to say about this.
We'll be getting some angry tweets.
I think the best is he's on the lam because he kicked a dude off a balcony and paralyzed him potentially and put him in a coma. But it's like a scene from a superhero movie because he's like hanging out with all the homeless folks and just like puts his hood up every time somebody real slow and methodical when he puts the hood up.
And he steals the crappiest minivan on the LaRusso lot.
Yeah, but it's a Chester. It's a panel van. It's a Chester. So every time my kid walks by, I yell Chester and slug him in the shoulder real hard. and he's four, but I told him rules are rules.
If rules are rules.
You see a jester, you got to call it, and then you got to slam somebody.
He's got to learn now.
Yeah, especially, you're not going to see too many panel vans. We used to be able to call those all the time when you're out on the road.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And then one other element, when the LaRussos are defending Sam and the rest of the kids, they're terrible parents in that scene.
They really are.
It's my daughter's a good kid. My daughter didn't do nothing. Definitely one of the lead instigators. Each side had some lead instigators. And literally every time throughout this season, there's an interaction. She's like the lead instigator of all of it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's the LaRusso blood. It's what causes all the problems.
Yeah, she gets to be scared and scarred for life about the incident, but also start every fight after that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I get, and like they don't want her to be, you know, some shrinking violet, typical damsel in distress female character, but she does every time there's something. It's like, well, that's this. If Sam just hadn't done X, this Y over here wouldn't have happened.
Right. Yeah, but it's kids, right? It's very much what I think I like about it. It is kid logic.
Yeah. You
know? Like they very much show the high schoolers in this as not clearly not having, you know, fully formed thoughts and ideas and being able to make those rational decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. I think it's a nice twist on the, you know, because they get into the teeny drama, but I think it's really nice that they kind of give it some of that real world. Like, they're going to make stupid and bad decisions, and there's just all involved karate and fighting their arch nemesis.
Very relatable content.
Yeah. Story of my life. Would they take this from my high school years?
I can't tell you how many times I got in a karate riot because I kissed the wrong boy.
It happens, man.
Boy, if I had a nickel.
So, other things that happen. Johnny's trying to find work. He wants to see Miguel. He wants to help pay for his medical costs. We know that his family is not well off. They live in those dumpy apartments that Johnny lives in somehow. He lost his job when Kreese just took his dojo at the end of season two, and he said, fine, yours. So now he wants a job not to pay for rent, but to pay for Miguel's medical costs. And he keeps drinking and all that good stuff. Meanwhile, Daniel realizes there's a missing van because I think it's his cousin that works for them, who is a total doofy moron, realizes one of their vans is missing. They don't realize it's missing because it's the shitty panel van.
Well, and my thought was, how is that van on that lot? Because they sell luxury automobiles. You can't tell me someone drug that van onto the lot and be like, that Mercedes, I'll take two.
Yeah, Daniel San's riding around in an Audi.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a mid-90s Chester Wood panel minivan.
He gave Johnny the Challenger. Just was like, here, fine, you can have a Challenger. But this van sits on the lot somewhere in the back where they're like, well, just in case we have to give Johnny Lawrence another car.
Maybe they have an economic lot.
That means
it's like
poor.
Further down the street.
Yes. Yeah. Right next to the Dollar General.
Actually, one on each side.
Yes.
It's part of their business model.
Dollar General, just a lot full of vans.
And but the good news is, no matter how crappy the vehicle is, they pay enough money to put a tracking device in all the cars.
Which costs more than that van.
And I don't know, is this a thing? Is this a thing with car sales? Are there tracking devices in cars?
I'm going to say yes. Let's just say yes. Can we just say yes? I have not done any research on this, but I'm going to say yes.
When I was watching it, I didn't think of it. But when I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, that sounds preposterous.
This sounds ridiculous.
But maybe it does. But the good news is they can track the van. So, excuse me. We get this the first hint because Daniel is, you know, waiting for Johnny to come home. And he lets him know, hey, I got a lead on Robbie. I about called him Johnny because Johnny's better than Robbie. I don't like Robbie. They got a lead on him, and they're going to team up. So it's like the first – it's really like what two seasons have been building to, and we get like our first hint, our first hint of them – teaming up. And all while this is happening, and Miguel's in the hospital having this very allegorical dream that he's in a tournament fighting for his life while in a coma fighting for his life. And then when the imaginary fight he's losing, he in real life flatlines. And they bring him back with the old electro pads, give him a defibrillator to the heart, and they bring him back. And the end of the episode, in his little dream state, he beats his opponent and wakes up from his coma.
Oh, it was a beautiful moment.
And we're on another cliffhanger.
But what we... Isn't it in this episode where Robbie feels betrayed? Or is that the second?
Betrayed by what? I think it's the second.
Is it?
Watched three of them and this show is so cohesive.
You get a real D+ effort tonight, guys. Real sorry about that. Oh boy, a cliffhanger. Here we go. You're right, Jay. Let me check.
Well, to be fair, is there an episode where Robbie doesn't feel like somebody's betrayed him?
Oh, no. Robbie is perpetually a victim.
And it's dumb. It's so dumb.
It is.
Like, nobody can do anything around him.
God, he's just a sentient fart, is what he is.
In a show full of great... Oh, there is something in this show I want to mention. And it was about a character, a main character from season one and season two. And in this episode, they throw her away with one line. And I think that's very sad. And I wish I knew why they did that. Maybe there's later plans, but I've read some interviews with the actress and it does not sound like that's the case, and that's Aisha.
Oh, and that was really, really a bummer. I loved her character.
Yeah, they kept Robbie and got rid of Aisha.
Yeah.
And
because she was having troubles and they sent her off to a different school.
Yeah, she had a really great story arc. She was one of the few characters who went to Cobra Kai and didn't go off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
She was like the person that was there kind of bringing peace by being Sam's friend who's with Miyagi-Do and the rest of Cobra Kai. She had a really great spot and a really great arc. And what I read was that the writers didn't know where to take her story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. She had so much potential.
Yeah.
I think she was a great character. I think, I also think part of the thing that was problematic with that too is, and one of the critiques I've heard about this show is it pushes it more towards a bit of a whitewashed I mean, you have Miguel and his family, but it's a little bit whitewashed, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying you should have characters just to fill a demographic number, but she had an arc. She gave more a wider representation for the show, and she also didn't have, you know, your like classic actress figure, which I think is nice to have a variety of shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, and yep. I liked that, and I think that was part of her character growth as well. I mean, she's uncomfortable with herself, and karate helps her get past that. So I think that bothered me, getting rid of that character, because
yeah,
her potential and what she represented for a variety of different, you know, people to see themselves on screen, and then they got rid of it.
Well, and that's
how they do that.
Yeah. And I'm with you. The fact that, you know, when she was the daughter of an ex-pro football player. So when you first really get, when she's in the dojo and she just tackles Miguel in season one, and you're like, okay. And Johnny was like, all right, I can work with this. And he wasn't teaching her how to do the high kicks and the flips and everything that all the other characters, he was teaching her how to work within her strengths and to avoid her weaknesses, which I thought was a really important, like to say, it's just really important to see that for a lot of people. And then for them to just be like, meh, she's gone now. It's like, well, but you keep, yeah, Robbie.
Literally, like the two formerly popular girls, one's not so popular. They literally call her front wedgie. So they're referring to the thing that Aisha did to stop her from being the popular mean girl.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, Aisha, her parents got her out of here after the karate riot because they didn't want her being around here anymore.
Yeah.
As they're like walking off screen. And then that was it. That's the only thing said about it.
Yep.
That was like Sam's childhood friend. She has no thoughts about it.
No. She's not trying to call her on the telephone. She's not trying. That sounded like a very old man thing to say. Jeez.
Those girlfriends aren't even calling on the phone.
They're not even chat. They're not even gabbing on the telephone. What? Just give me my Bengay, Ovaltine, and my walker, and send Pop to bed. What the hell was that? Anyway, they're not texting, they're not Skyping. What do the kids do? I don't know. They're not TikToking. What did the kids TikTok? But regardless, there's just nothing. And Sam's just like, oh, well, Robbie's gone and Miguel's in the hospital. Oh, woe is me. Well, but Aisha's got to go make a whole new set of friends. Yeah,
literally your best friend.
You know what? I think we need to write a spin-off about Aisha.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
We definitely, you and I definitely have the perspective for that
character. Absolutely. Two bearded white dudes from the Midwest ought to write that story for that young lady. That young, yeah, African-American woman. Who knows better than us?
In California.
In California. Who knows better than two middle class Midwestern white dudes with beards and questionable backgrounds about the experience of a young Gen Z African American girl in the Valley?
Let's do it.
It's a hit.
There's no way we'll screw this up.
And I get twitchy when we sometimes, and I'm just sitting here like rolling my shorts up. I'm just rolling my shorts up to they're Magnum PI level now. That's how nervous I am. Saying this, I don't know if I'm not cutting any. I always say I'm going to cut some of that. I'm never going to cut anything. You know that.
That involves effort.
And you get a D plus tonight.
We are not writing the Cobra Kai Aisha story. That would probably be a pretty stronger backlash than her getting kicked off of the show. If we did that, I think.
Nice try.
But anyways, that to me is the biggest bummer of season three is they threw away, and threw away is the word, man. They threw away one of the strongest characters on the show, and she was doing a really great job. And what's even more sad is the actress, like how she found out. It didn't sound like, you know, it was real well communicated. It was like she was like a struggle. You know, they play high schoolers, but they're all like in their early 20s. So she was like a struggling actress. Like literally this job was like her bit. You know, that's all she had. And just like that, bam.
Yeah.
Gone. And for no reason.
It's my biggest disappointment with this show, I will say. And like in all sincerity, I know I had that here comes a punchline tone after that, but there's not. It really was a bummer. Because she was rad. And then to keep Robbie alive and well.
Oh, my goodness, Miguel kicked him off of the...
Man, I feel like nothing would have happened in the show. Like, they could have ended the entire show if Miguel had kicked Robbie off. Everyone would have been like, oh my god, yeah, you know what, it's fine. It solves a lot of problems. Everyone get back to class.
They tied that storyline up perfect.
You know what? We can end the show. Everyone's happy now, right? Everyone's happy.
Everyone's happy. Okay. Well, I think that's a pretty good breakdown of episode one, season three. What are your thoughts on the? You know, there was a lot of excitement with this coming out at the beginning of the year, you know, because not long before Netflix had purchased season one, season two. So then, like, the world knew about Cobra Kai and not just the people who caught it on YouTube. So what did you think first episode with Netflix?
Besides the we'll take Aisha and do like the writers did and set her aside. I was hooked, honestly. Like, it came out, and I was cautiously optimistic, because I'm like, how are they going to catch lightning in a bottle again? And then that first episode, and seeing the way they set everything up, I was like, you know what? They've done it. It was a good cliffhanger after that first episode, which made me, like I told you earlier, just binge the entire season in one night, because I was like, well, now I gotta know. Okay, obviously he's gonna wake up. They're not gonna kill him off, but now I gotta know what happens next.
This is unquestionably the most bingeable show on TV.
Oh, for sure.
Because the episodes are just short enough,
uh-huh,
you know, that you can burn through it, and it's so catchy and snappy. That's how I describe the show. It's snappy. It's quick. Even this one, I would say this episode is probably one of the slower burn episodes. It's not really like a slow burn. It's a slow burn for Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Minimal action, because what I think they're doing now since the Karate Riot, which is seriously one of the coolest fight scenes on TV that I've ever
really
seen.
It really is.
I think they want to build up to those big crescendo events, and I think they do a really great job of it. So I like this episode. It just starts off for me. That's really early on in the episode too, that they give that throwaway line about Aisha. That's kind of heartbreaking. But aside from that poor decision, the show is still, man, I'm still in. I'm still liking the arc for, really, they have good arcs for most characters with the exception of, well, now two. Robbie doesn't have a good arc because he's a terrible character, and Aisha doesn't have an arc because they got rid of her.
Yeah.
So, all right. Was that season one or episode one?
I think that's episode one. I think that's the best synopsis of episode one that's ever been recorded.
Good. I'm glad I was reading it off of IMDb that somebody else typed up.
Me too.
I mean, I watched it.
Never seen an episode. I'll be honest with you guys. I've never actually watched it.
Well, we're recording late, so we watched this months ago. And like, I think our original plan was kind of like, oh, we'll watch it, we'll record. And then like, we watched the first episode and we're like, I'm sick. I was like, I'm six in. You're like, I finished it the day it came out. So I'm rewatching it as we record it to try and refresh myself. But it is the show. The episodes are so short and they tie in together so well.
Yeah.
I just watched three episodes and honestly, I couldn't tell you which one happened in episode one or episode three. Because it just melds together so well.
It really does. You don't know. Like I did earlier, I'm like, wait, am I on the right episode? Was that the wrong episode? Which episode was that? Oh, no, episode two? Okay, I'll shut up. Because it does. It just all blends together.
So, perfect. All right. Well, what I think we'll do, we'll wrap up. And we will immediately record episode two.
That's the magic of podcasting, everybody.
I'm just kidding. I mean, we're going to go watch episode two. We're going to. In a week, we'll record it for
you. Yes, everything is done the day before we release it so that you get the freshest takes possible.
I did just rewatch it.
Yeah, we're only doing two, right? We're just doing.
We're just doing two.
Okay.
We're getting slap happy without sleep right now.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us for this episode of
Flashbacks Presents.
Kubrick Kai. We actually did it right that time.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.